Welcome to K-Drama Musings, where you'll find reactions, reviews, and recommendations of K-dramas and more. I am your host, Carol, and I'm delighted to have you with me today. If you like what you hear, I invite you to join me on Instagram at K-Dramas Musings for more fun content. If this is your first time listening, go ahead and subscribe. K-Drama Musings is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you like the show, please give me a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Your support is deeply appreciated. Let's get to today's show. Today, we're back to talk about Perfect Marriage Revenge. Now, this show really took over the internet with what felt like everyone and their mom watching. If you have not listened to our mid-show review, I invite you to pause this episode, treat yourself to the first review, and then come and delve into this one. I have my lovely friends back with me to share their final thoughts. Listeners, join me in welcoming my friends Caitlin from No Sleep for Dramas and Na from K-Drama Bingo.
Hi, everyone.
Yay. Hello.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
How are you doing?
You know, I've been telling everybody about this drama and about our plan to keep talking about it. And when I mean, like, I really mean everybody, people who truly don't care. I can't stop myself.
Caitlin, welcome to my life all the time, Na. I like, this is a reason why I have a blog and I talk to you guys on social media, because no one in my life cares what I do in terms of dramas and drama watching.
Yeah, normally I can withhold it because I just read your blog and I go on social media and I listen to everybody's podcast and I talk out loud when I'm listening, you know. But there was something about this drama where I could not hold it in. I just found it quite delightful.
Uh-huh. I'm so excited you're back. And while we're here, a few things to celebrate. Now I know you had a
fundraiser.
Thank you. You had a fundraiser out and you hit your goal. So I wanted to say congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, for context for folks who don't know, along with several other fellow K-drama fans, including the folks from the Unnies on Opas podcast, Susie and Lynn, Nazreen from Soon Diaries, Sarai from K-Drama Cafe, and Lola from Lola Pops Off About K-Dramas. We had a fundraiser together to support the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and we're just super appreciative that folks really showed up and showed out to meet our goal donation-wise, but also to share their own stories about how dramas have helped them through tough times. So thank you both for sharing your stories. I think it's just very relatable for many of us that once you become, you know, deeply engaged in this wonderful world of Asian dramas, there really are stories that really bolster your spirits when things are hard. So we were really appreciative of all the fans who joined us in that fundraiser.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing it. And I'm so glad we could hit our goals or your goals. And I'm looking forward to supporting on the next one also, because, yeah, I think there's something unique about our K-drama community and how we show up for each other. And I definitely want us to continue and just be bigger and bigger. So it's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you both have on your watch list now that Perfect Marriage Revenge has ended?
So the only two that are still on my watch list after finishing everything, I still have not finished Seven Escape, which I hope to finish next week. And then I also am watching Moon in the Day, which ends next week as well. And then yesterday I added My Man is Cupid with my man.
Yay!
I'm not surprised I loved it, but at the same time I am, because I'm just super iffy on if the comedy will hit with me or not. And gladly I can say that it did, so I'm loving it. I also started Night Has Come yesterday, which is like a horror slash, it's not like horror, I should say. It's like a All of Us Are Dead, but instead of zombies, it's like the mafia game and people die. So, okay. And it's not as like production quality. It's not as big of a production quality as All of Us Are Dead. But it's still a good watch. I thoroughly enjoyed the first two episodes. But that's all I have on my watch list currently. I have a lot that I plan to watch.
That's pretty short for you, Caitlin.
It is. It is very short for me. But I'm trying to not bring... So what happens usually at the end of the year is because of how busy the holidays are for me, I never finish anything from November to December, and I keep adding stuff. So come January, I'm overwhelmed because I have so many already on my watch list. And then I bring all that over plus the new January one. So I'm trying not to bring so many continuing dramas over to 2024 this year.
Gotta knock them out.
Yeah.
Normally I'm watching like 10 at a time, but that's not the case right now.
Okay. What about you now?
So I am definitely late on this train, but I watched My Lovely Liar last week and really enjoyed it. I've been reading Good Day to Be a Dog so that I can have the context to watch once it's finished airing. I'm kind of like partway through Only for Love, which is a C drama. And then I've also been watching My Beautiful Man, which is a J-drama and not normally like totally my speed, but I'm definitely enjoying it. And then on the back to the Korean side of things, I'm really looking forward to Death's Game that comes out, I think.
Next week,
yeah. You know, I love Seung-guk. I'm just very excited to see this one for sure.
Yeah. Cast is stacked too, though.
Yeah,
everybody's in that drama.
Cast. Yeah,
like, you're gonna see Sung-hoon again really, really shortly, and he looks good. And he looks good in Death's Game. I saw pictures.
Look. And I'm gonna see Lee Jae-wook, so I'm excited too.
Yes.
Wait, talking about Sung-hoon looking good, Carol and I both joined the live stream for Vicky's first ever international K-drama day, and they had a live with Sung-hoon, and I was charmed. Like, I find him entertaining in variety shows, but to see him and the way he was showing up in that context, the part that was funniest at the end, there was this like drawing game basically. And he is not an artist, but it was deeply entertaining. It was really good. Yeah. So,
and he was so shocked that people could tell what he was trying to draw.
Well, he was shocked because in the beginning, nobody could tell. So like he drew his dog and people kept saying it was a cat. And he was very concerned about that. But as the game went on, we could tell what he was drawing.
That was a fun live. If you want to watch it, I know it's still on Vicky's profile on Instagram. So head on over there to watch the live with Sung-hoon. And the host did really well.
Did a great job.
Yeah, I enjoyed her. She was fantastic. Okay.
And of course, he definitely mentioned some stuff about Perfect Marriage Revenge.
I know.
So, you know, got to hear a few of his candid thoughts, which was fun as well.
Yeah. I don't have too many on my list. right now, I am really enjoying A Journey to Love. I just need people to watch it because I'm going to start posting like videos and things, and I don't want to put spoilers. So people, start watching A Journey to Love. And I'm watching, I'm enjoying the story of Park's marriage contract. Welcome to Samdari, Man is Cupid, other shows, Tell Me You Love Me, Castaway Diva, I finished that, My Demon, I don't like the title, but it's good, it's enjoyable, it's fun. Journey.
Wait, you don't like the title of My Demon?
I don't like the title.
Why don't you like the title?
That's just because, there's a funny story. When I was a kid, my sister and I used to love to sing in the choir. And my sister does this amazing harmony. You start a song and she has the harmony. So there was a song that we learned in school that was like a hymn. And it went like, day by day, dear Lord, all these three things I pray to see thee. mon, like Old English. But we didn't know that's the lyric, so we were saying to see demon.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh. It was to see demon clearly, love demon nearly, follow demon dearly. And I was like,
and no adult corrected you?
We were singing in the backyard one day, and my uncle hears, and he's like, excuse me?
Whole demon nearly. Oh, that's great.
And since when, since then, we don't like the word. We just avoid it. That's why I don't like the title. But yeah.
Okay, that's an excellent reason.
I'm also watching I May Love You, Love Me, Hear Your Voice, Love Me, Love My Voice, Vigilante, Moon in the Day, A Good Day to Be a Dog, and The Matchmaker. So not a lot at all.
Right, right.
Just enough. But let's get into our perfect marriage revenge. So this ended last week. And this time around, we won't go into the synopsis. I do want to give spoiler alerts at this point because the show has finished, I think, last week now. And we're wrapping up. This is a review of to serve as a wrap up for the show. So if you have not finished this show, I invite you to pause, finish the show, and come back to us. All right. Ladies, what did you think of the second half of the show?
I thought it was fun. I'm sure I would have an even stronger reaction if I had had time to watch from beginning to end with no breaks, because I just feel like this is a story where the momentum carries you a lot. And so that continuity of momentum is important. But I really thought it was fun. I had my doubts about some of the writing choices in the first half, having, you know, gone in the deep end with my obsession and read, reading the webtoon. And so I was like, huh, I don't know why they made these choices. But I think that they did a really good job wrapping the storylines and pulling things together, and nobody was redeemed. And that was one of the big things that I was waiting for. I wanted everyone to get their dirty just desserts, and they did. So yeah, I thought it was fun.
Caitlin?
Yeah, overall, I thought this was a really fun drama. I'm glad they only kept it to 12 episodes.
Yeah.
I do say with like some of the endings of the bad characters, I wish it could have been a little different depending on the character. But they're like really minor things. Like overall, it's not like, why the hell did they give that ending? Like, that's not my reaction. But it's like really minor stuff at the end of the writing that kind of was like, that could have been better. Or why did you make that choice? But overall, like, I enjoyed watching this. It's Mok Jong. It's like, for people who are worried that this is because people keep saying it's Mok Jong, this is low Mok Jong. Like, you will like this. Versus like the daily drama 120 episode Mok Jong. That's not this.
It's totally entry level. I am not a Mok Jong person. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with them. That's just not what catches my interest. Mm-hmm. And I ate this one up. It's kind of analogous to Business Proposal in that way, that I think for the right type of person, this could be a really nice like first K drama.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
Or just introduction to the revenge drama genre.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with you, Caitlin, that 12 episodes was the way to go. And, you know, there's all kinds of influences these days in how long a drama turns out. And so I really think that this was one where it didn't seem like it was forced to a close too quickly. They didn't have a lot of nothing burgers along the way filling up space. You know, I think they used the time well. And absolutely, there are things that I agree with you that I could have seen more extremes maybe towards the end would have been nice. Overall, I think they made good use of the space.
I'm a little different.
Oh, okay.
I did not like the second half of the drama. I don't know if I didn't like it, but I definitely remember making a story on Instagram and saying, I feel I'm not jumping to watch it. And I'm trying to figure out why, whether it wasn't too Makjang for me or it was too predictable for me. Like the areas that I needed explored, they weren't enough.
I'd love to hear what you think some of those are, because I think that's part of why I was saying like the momentum thing. I do think the energy kind of peaked earlier than I would have expected, and I wanted to see that escalation continue. So I totally agree with you on that.
Okay. Like, for example, there were certain people who in the second half I just didn't care about. So
yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
Like, I remember our first episode, I'm like, why is the ex-boyfriend or ex-husband still in the picture?
Yeah.
And in the second half, I'm still like, why is he still here? Because I don't think he really serves a purpose the whole show.
You know?
No, he didn't.
I totally agree with, that was one of my few frustrations with the second half. Overall, there were things that are just like, eh, it's fine. But that was one of my few like active frustrations where I was like, y'all, this is a waste of space. And it wasn't until literally the end of the last episode where I was like, okay, I see why you kept him around so right. that Yura could be miserable as she deserves. You know, yeah. But, you know, talking about we're going to raise a baby in this tiny house, you know, but I don't think he had to have that much airtime in order for that conclusion to occur. So, yeah, I totally agree with you on that count.
And even with the big brother, when we find out that his leg is actually fine, I almost feel like I would have liked to see that earlier where we see him being totally normal, and then in front of others, he's still pretending. Yeah. I felt like that would have been more like a manipulative crutch than at the end, oh, I'm fine. When did your leg get better? Oh, I went to the States. I was
my God. I hate that. And that's something that actually Susie and Lynn from the Unis on Opas podcast, they talk about this like idea of like magical surgeries in the US that like in Korea, people always like disappear and then come back. And I hate that idea, period. I particularly hate that idea as an American who knows that is not like, we don't have any secret magic medical stuff that Korea doesn't have for something as simple as a twisted ankle, which is basically what he had, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, sure, maybe just by size of population, we might have specialists in certain rare diseases, but dude had a twisted ankle that he faked for like well over a decade and then had some magical twisted ankle surgery in the US. Stop it. That definitely got on my nerves.
Yeah. Okay. So before we jump in even further, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the main characters and their story developments. So looking at our leads, did you buy it?
Okay. So not to go back really quickly to what we were talking about, but I want to put my...
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So first off, with the ex-fiance, I also saw the reason why he came back into the story. He kind of left in the second half and then came back. I honestly kind of felt bad for him right at the end but at the same time, I didn't, because he got what he wanted. He kind of apologized and was like, yeah, that's shitty of me. I should never have teamed up with her. My sister was awful, blah, blah, blah. Kind of basically, and then walked off, right? And then she shows up pregnant at his front door, and while he's like wooing another woman. So like
that was so funny.
At one part I was like, okay, I feel really bad for him because he actually grew sort of through this. But at the same time, it's like this story would never have happened at all if his feelings were never revealed to her in the first place. And he wanted her from until he saw her true colors, and now he has her. So I'm still not quite sure how I feel about him specifically in terms of how he ended up, because I'm conflicted with how, not that I like the guy, because Yura being in that situation, she totally deserves it. And I don't have any problem with how she ended up. But him, I'm not really sure. His family could go off themselves too. Like, they deserve, they deserve her as a daughter-in-law, sister-in-law also. But I'm not really with him. I don't know.
I agree that, like, the real terrible part is those three women together.
Yes, yes.
But frankly, he deserves to be in the middle of it. And so I hear you. Yeah. Like, he's not as...
I think I would have... He's not as...
Weird is the wrong word. He's not as terrible a character, per se, as those three. Yeah. So it feels...
I think the reason why I felt bad for him is because comparatively to his mother and sister and to Yura especially, they didn't change whatsoever from beginning to end. They didn't see what they were doing wrong. They were still entitled, everything. Whereas he actually apologized and got angry with his sister for doing that shitty stuff online and whatever. So I think that's kind of a reason why I'm sort of felt bad for him at the end, because he actually... it to some extent saw the error of his ways in a way, whereas the other people not really so much. The problem I had with the brother is, one, as you said, Carol, I wish they had revealed the leg sooner, and I wish he was more maniacal
throughout
the second half.
He wasn't evil
like
enough.
He could have been more evil. But also, I hated the part where he finds out that his mother was one that left. And then he was like, oh my God, all my actions, I never would have done that. And I was just like, I wish he either had found that out and still been evil, like found it out early on, still been evil, or like would have been found out and I'm like, okay, well, this is me. Like, I did not understand why that would have changed his entire feeling towards his brother and his father. And also the fact that he could have healed through one conversation with his father. Like, so that would be like, I don't know.
I hear you, Caitlin. And also, I read that scene a little differently.
Okay.
I didn't hear him suddenly feeling positive towards Doguk. So it was really like he was like, you know, dad, if only you had told me, blah, blah, blah. But even in the wording, and I don't know if I'll find it fast enough, but I actually took note of it because I thought it was so notable that he was like, I wouldn't have turned out this way if you didn't tell me, if you had told me. And I'm like, no, like, he's still the same. He didn't actually have any healing or whatever. He's still blaming other people for the choices he made.
That's true.
Well over a decade, right?
Yeah.
And so it's, to me, it was just actually evidence of the fact that, like, even at his lowest, where he's been humbled and he's sitting in prison finding out that, like, the lie he's been telling himself all along is not true, even in that context, the one person he kind of thinks he loves, his dad, he's still blaming him. Like, he doesn't actually have that character growth. But I do think that because we didn't see the extreme of his evil, it kind of looks a little bit like a redemption kind of thing.
Right.
I just saw it as, like, more evidence of his frailty is not the right word, but just him being lame, frankly. He's just lame and doesn't take responsibility for his actions.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that interpretation. I definitely did not read it that way, but I wish I had, because it makes sense. It definitely makes sense. So thank you for that explanation. I understand that more. So, because at the time I'm like, are you kidding me? This is so lazy. The writers are so lazy for doing this. But anyway, so those are my two cents. Anyway, Carol, on to your question. I loved the couple, except I did have one little issue.
Okay.
With the very end. When she finally finds out that he has a date timer thing on his wrist, why the heck did she freak out? Like, she acted like he killed her. And I'm like, do you remember the accident at the beginning? You're the one that did the U-turn in front of him first. He then hit you because you went in front of him. And you act like he gunned for you down the street and, like, murdered you. And you run off for, like, half an episode. Thank God it was only half an episode. I was like, are you kidding me? But I hated her reaction to finding out, because I'm like, this makes no sense. Like, yes, I understand he didn't tell you, but at the same time, why are you so angry at him about this? He did not murder you.
Wow. Okay. So this clearly, the difference in our two reactions comes down to the fact that I did not watch episode one. So I actually didn't know she did that weird dramatic U-turn until the end, that like the flashback scene, because that's not how it, the whole car accident thing is not how it went down in the webtoon. Okay. And so I didn't read it as her being angry that he killed her. I read it as most of the anger was about him withholding the information. I mean, you're definitely right. She was angry, like, oh my God, you killed me, blah, blah, blah. But like, I didn't get that nuance because I didn't have that context that you guys had. So to me, I thought she was upset. Like, we've come this far. We love each other. We've bared our souls. And you didn't tell me this basic thing, which I also was like, why the fuck have you not told her? Like,
exactly.
Hello, yeah. It is episode 11. Like, yeah. I genuinely, unironically, I don't understand the motivation for not telling her, because it's not like he thinks if he tells her, he'll snap forward in time. Or, I mean, yeah, there's the whole BS of like, I don't want you to think I killed you. But like, you guys have bared your souls about so many things at this point. Like, this one seems stupid. Did you really think you were going to wear a watch for the rest of your life?
Right. Yeah.
Or especially because he had a moment to tell her when she said, let's get married or whatever, and let's divorce in like a year or two. Mm-hmm. He knew in that moment that she had this timer thing. And he also had a timer. So he should have said, yeah, okay. Just so you know, in case you missed it, I'm in the same boat, because I felt like that was the moment to tell her, because we saw him grieving it and grieving the possibility that she will die again, while also knowing he also has a timer. And so I would have loved to see them spend some time on what is going to happen. Like that one trip to the Sha woman. And she's like, oh, you're both alive and dead at the same time, whatever. But I just felt like they weren't concentrating on what was going to happen when the time came. So when she said she was pregnant, I was like, sis, how is this going to work?
Right.
Especially since they did the time jump of her pregnancy. So I think, again, that was a missed opportunity for dramatic tension. Like, if that stuff had been backed out to like episode 9.
Right. Yeah.
Reveal happens in episode 9. They, you know, make up about lying to each other. And then there's the tension of what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen. Countdown to the day. Like, that was so condensed. And frankly, like, if I had to choose between the way they did it versus adding four more episodes to ramp it up, the way they did it is better for sure. Yeah. I didn't need another four episodes of it. But I do think that was like a missed opportunity on the Mokjung energy of it all.
I also have
it didn't feel that dramatic. It didn't feel that dramatic.
I also have a question. So when we did the episode in the first six, you said that the webtoon wasn't done yet.
Correct.
So the ending where like
in translation, at least.
So have you finished it now? Like, did they have the entire thing now, or are you still waiting for like to find out how the webtoon ends in terms of what happens with the timers?
I personally am still waiting. Like, there's about six more episodes that I haven't read. Mostly because I have exceeded my webtoon budget for the month. My budget is already very high, and I blow through that shit fast. So, so it's out there, and I haven't sought any non-legal ways to find it. So I don't know, but what I'll say is that I don't even know what chapter it is. Let's call it 115 or whatever. Like, is in the midst of the brother kidnapping Iju and and right at the moment where the accident happens.
Okay,
because I'm really curious, because for me, it was very anticlimactic with the whole, like, the kidnapping was fine, him getting attacked or whatever. But, like, I actually had to rewatch the scene to kind of understand what was supposed to happen if Sung-hoon hadn't, like, had the light bulb go off in his head and was like, oh, my God, my brother's kidnapping her. And, like, what would have happened? And this is my interpretation of it, is, like, the white truck would have hit her again. That was my interpretation of it. But because Sung-hoon jumped in, because he stopped the car, because he got her out of the car, like, the white truck kind of just blew past him. And also, I was laughing at that scene because Sung-hoon, like, she's like, the white truck is coming, the white truck is coming. And Sung-hoon, like, dove over his brother. But, like, there was no way that white truck was going to hit anybody in that scene at all.
That whole scene was, like, I actually had to stop and write a long rant. Like, I had to write out a rant because I was so annoyed on so many levels. Like, first of all, is there a clause in the union contract for writers in Korea that there must be a white truck of Dune? Like, what the hell? Yes. To be clear, that is not in the original story. Y'all added a white truck of Doom when it was not there, and then made it totally illogical where suddenly there happened to be on an empty road where nobody happens to pass by except this gigantic truck ignoring the four empty lanes honking at you, and then suddenly it blows past you and just stops. So it's not like anybody exited the truck. It was just like, y'all, this is like, I hate that trope even when it's like there was a hitman and the truck.
Oh, I love the trope. It just did not make sense in this one.
It didn't make sense. I hate the trope, and it didn't make sense in this context at all. So, yeah. I already have...
Now you're doing too much critical thinking. Like...
No, I know. I know that none of this is necessary. I'm just saying that's how much it bothered me. Yeah. I was like, of course the writers don't care. When you put white truck, that means not thinking. Like, I needed some filler. But
I was just curious what that scene was in the webtoon, because as I just said, I just found it, other than like Sung-hoon fighting his brother and getting stabbed and that whole thing happening on the side of the road, I thought it was like very anticlimactic in terms of like, oh, the white truck passed, so the clocks are gone. Yay, we survived.
Like, yeah, it's way more dramatic in the webtoon. So spoiler, folks, but in the webtoon, basically, evil brother straps a bomb on the car after he escapes from jail because he's like, I'm going to kill myself and I'm taking Iju and the... I don't know if he knew she was pregnant, but I'm taking her out with me. So it's like literally bomb attached to the car, high speed chase, la-di-da-di-da, and like at the last moment his seatbelt gets stuck, so even though Iju is able to escape, he's like still trapped in the car, and then stupid Doguk goes and like cuts him safe.
Okay, so
see, that would have been so much better.
Yeah.
Okay, something just hit me. When the brother kidnaps Iju, is that the date? Is that their last day?
Yeah, like, that was the date. Yes. Yeah, that was
and
the date.
In the webtoon, it's like, it's her birthday and it's the last day because that was the day on her birthday where she heard ex-hubby confess to Yura, and she was so like shook. And again, in the webtoon, she like runs out into the street because she's like not paying attention, and Doguk hits her and kills her. So all of that to me, I was like, you could have kept that, you could have kept those essential facts. I don't actually see the reason for the adjustment. I don't think it was did any good, and I think it actually reduced a lot of the tension. But yes, like that day should have been a tense day that they were counting down to, and instead we just got this kind of like cozy happy day, and then, you know, the nonsense where the brother-in-law calls him out as if that made any sense, and they don't even have any security, and this fool actually left his wife, and I was just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
That even makes me madder, because I'm like, wait, if this is doom day for us,
that's not the energy they gave us.
Why are you leaving the house to go see your brother-in-law?
First of all, why is brother-in-law telling you to leave the house, period? Like, Like, it doesn't make sense. You could have a phone call about all of this, but also, even if he didn't know it's doomsday because you haven't told everybody, like, again, in the webtoon context, everybody is on high alert about protecting Eju. There's all this security, like, everybody in the family kind of knows, and brother-in-law gets through anyway. In this nonsense version, he just strolled up. Like, nobody's being vigilant. Nobody's being vigilant.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Okay. Here's another... I feel like this is turning into we did not like it, but listeners,
no,
I loved it.
This is nitpicking.
Under potential for the second half, but the first half was so excellent that as a whole, it still ended up better than average.
Yeah. We're nitpicking at this point.
Because we care enough. Like, it's not nitpicking because we hated it. It's actually because we care enough that we wanted it to be a little better.
Exactly.
Thank you. Exactly. So now, mom. So this, I'm talking about Eju's real mom.
Jamie!
Now, Jamie, when she finds out that Jamie is her mom, and I'm just like, okay, this is not like, this reunion could have been more dramatic. Okay? I'll leave it at that. But when Jamie goes to the company as a shareholder, that whole scene, mm-hmm. I felt could have been like a, what's that show? Reborn Rich kind of vibe where it is more intense, more shocking. You know, the revelations come out and you're like, whoa, but grandpa came in and he's like, oh, Jamie, oh, that's your mom. Oh, hi.
Right. Like, I think, again, there were so many like near misses on that scene. Like, dude just came out of a basement, but he didn't even mention it. Nobody he doesn't even particularly look like he was locked up because he's always disheveled. But like there were so many opportunities. And then like the whole weird thing where like evil stepmom's like, take her out, as if everybody can't see her doing that. And then the security people are like trying to pull her out and Dogu's like trying to fight. I was just like, you guys tried to inject the drama in the wrong moments of this scene. And let's be real, every good Chaebol drama period always has some kind of emergency shareholder meeting. So you gotta up the ante in the context of a revenge drama emergency shareholder meeting, right? Like, this one was tame, you know?
Uh-huh. It was tame, especially for a takeover.
I think this drama, we said, like, it's a good intro to Mokjong and to revenge.
That's true.
But I think they went too tame on the Mokjong, especially.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is coming from somebody who loves Mokjong. So, like, this overall could have been a much higher Mokjong, and I would have loved it just the same. But maybe because they were trying to do, like, an intro to Mokjong drama for people because 75 countries watch this drama, maybe they just went too low for people, for experienced drama watchers.
Or maybe, I wonder, you know, because I genuinely don't know like if the entire script is written before they start filming or if it's like still in process, but I wonder to what extent the writing was adjusted to reflect the casting. I personally think that particularly the support roles, those people absolutely had the chops to do all kinds of wild and crazy, right? It's less clear to me if the lead actors could have necessarily pulled that off, but I would have liked to see them try. You know, I think that they had untapped depths of what they could have given as actors that, you know, that's not what was in the script, so that's not what they gave us. In the webtoon, the secretary whose dad is the artist.
Yes.
He also had the timer. He had also died in the accident and he had also come back a year. And so I understand, again, for like fitting into 12 episodes, they cut that out. But I think that's another element that like added more tension because it's like even once, you know, the couple has figured out like they don't really quite know how he fits into it yet. And, you know, just having those three timelines just automatically adds some complexity that was missing here in, yeah. in kind of like the countdown to D-Day.
Yeah. I was actually expecting him versus the husband because I didn't read the webtoon, but I was like, he's fishy.
Right. With like, all he, the
like, yeah, like there's something more. So I actually, when people were like trying to throw out theories of who had the second trimer, I thought it was him.
But he's the one who kills Yiju, no? In the hospital.
So how no, that's the mom. Him? The mom killed her. The mom did.
Wait.
I don't think it was the secretary.
The secretary gave her the phone for the grandfather.
Yeah.
But he walked out of the room after that.
Oh.
And then the adoptive mother came in and killed her.
So he was kind of intentionally passive.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. he didn't actually harm her. One thing I'll say, though, that didn't make sense to me in his characterization was all at the end, all of a sudden he's like smiling and like, you were the only one who treated me like a human. I was like, y'all, again, if you were going to introduce this positivity, it should have been introduced sooner. Because, again, in the webtoon, it actually like they actually grew up in the same orphanage. And so they had actually had a relationship. And they both knew that the whole like in the whole story. Right. It wasn't like a secret thing. And so. When he finally is like, yeah, I'm on your side, la-di-da, whatever, it makes sense because he's actually been hiding.
I need this drama as a daily 120 episode long mahjong. I need that.
I think it could have. I think it really could have done very, very well. Like the
We
would have gotten the tension, the nuance. We would have gotten the ridiculousness. Like, the source material is there. And of course, you know, now we have what we have. But, like, part of me is like, what if someone in Thailand remakes this? Like, give me the messy version, please. Yeah. Like, I feel like Thai is exactly... Wow. Hopefully this doesn't sound sus to anybody who's never watched a Thai drama, but I really think Thai energy is what this story deserves.
Lockhorn. It needed to be a Lockhorn.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. Thai or Turkish.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Turkish dramas would have bodied that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now that it's all over, what was your favorite scene?
I will say my favorite scene in the second half specifically was, I just think it was incredibly well done when Yiju went to Jamie's house. I think the complexity of the emotions, I think everything that Jamie says to Yiju about how Yiju should be proud of raising herself, I just think it was like incredibly well acted. I think it was the most justified crying scene for Yiju and just done really well. And it was literally the only part of the drama that like brought tears to my eyes. I didn't actually cry, but the tears were there. You know, they were welling. I will say that this was also the only scene though where I disagreed with the Vicky Subbers. And like, let's be real, Vicky Subbers are second only to the angels, right? They are doing the Lord's work.
For real.
And I do not speak Korean, but like, you know, at this point, when you listen to a language as much, there are certain phrases you know, right? And so there's a certain point where like Jamie is like, oh, where's Daeguk, right? And or Doguk. And what she actually asks is like, oh, son-in-law isn't here, right? Which like gives a very specific tone, and then she immediately mm-hmm. apologizes and says like, oh, maybe I was overstepping or whatever, and the subs were just like, oh, Mr. So isn't here. It's like, it doesn't convey the same thing of like the emotion behind it of like she has welcomed him as her family mm-hmm. and then she's like in front of her daughter worried like, oh, maybe you're thinking I'm overstepping. So like understanding that that's the tone that interaction starts on and where they end up in that scene, I think is pretty important. So I was a little bummed that that kind of emotional note was left out. But I just really thought that the acting in that scene was really incredible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about you, Caitlin?
Just on pure entertainment, I loved when Yura walked into the ex-fiance's house all 9 months pregnant and been like, all right, I'm staying here now. Like that entire scene between the mother and the sister and the woman he was wooing walking out, like that entire stuff. That was just satisfactory gold.
That is one good thing that Yura did, because she saved that woman from a horrible mother-in-law and a horrible sister-in-law.
Sure did.
But are we sure the baby is for...
I'm 100% sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Who else would it be? I mean, she was out here hoeing, so I feel like if there was some other person, they would have showed us.
It's the brother.
She wanted it to be him.
But that's
they alluded to it in like episode 10 or 11 that she took a DNA, or the family made her, one of the two.
Grandma was like,
we're going to make sure.
With the magical medical technology that doesn't exist in Korea, she was like, other countries know how to do a paternity test in utero. So here we go. So yeah, it's definitely his.
Definitely his.
Okay. All right. My favorite moment is still the wedding dress scene when she cuts it up.
Yes. Like, if I had to pick just one, that is absolutely it. Like, that will be forever the scene that reminds me of this drama, that when I name this drama, I think of. It was so original, so dramatically well done. It was beautiful, and it made me feel proud to be a woman. I was like, stab that pen. Rip that dress.
For real. Because I don't feel like after that she ever had that anger, that level of anger. Because everything, sis cried too much. She cried too much. I was so
The only other anger was her almost hitting her mother-in-law over the head with a vase, but was stopped.
Exactly. But she was stopped, which is fair. But after that, I don't see any, like,
You wanted more revenge. You wanted more over the top.
That's what I needed. Yeah. But I just felt like the whole second half, she was like a damsel in distress. And I'm like, where is the ownership in this revenge? Like, let's go, sis.
No, I totally agree with you. And again, in the context of the story, it made sense that she was like management rights. But if she had, like the webtoon said, I'm going to own this shit, I'm going to turn it all around, I think, again, that boss bitch energy would have been a really nice escalation.
Yeah.
This is, I guess, not really related, but I still don't understand the point of Dogook's creepy little shrine room with the art. I don't get it. Other than to like reintroduce the idea that she's an artist and that he knew a lot about her before she ever knew he existed. There was just...
that was the painting that got him to get to know her in the first place. So like, I don't think all that art was hers. Yes, I think it was just art he collected in general. I think it just, that was where that one piece she was looking for was.
And I agree with you. Like, I just, like, why? Why?
Well, he hadn't told her about the clock yet. So he couldn't say, I saw your art in New York over a year ago. And then that's how I ended up seeing you in the lobby of this and literally yelling at you saying, why the hell does your family treat you this way? like he couldn't say anything until they had the talk. And
I guess it was also a way to show that he's been loving her for a long time, because there was a scene where he says something like that to her, just to say, you don't know just how much I love you or how long I've been loving you. So it was an opportunity for them to show that, I guess. I felt like they did that a lot in the show, though, where they would just, we said it in episode 1, let's show it in episode 11, stuff like that. So,
right.
Just to try and link it all together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So who was your worst character, would you say?
So to me, the grandfather and the father, neither of them were evil enough, and mm-hmm. their ending was too generous.
Mm.
Right? This whole, like, now they have happy little family conversations around the board table, and then they have a tradition of going out to eat afterwards was weird. It was mm-hmm. weird. I liked when the grandfather and the father cried together and Yura saw that. That was highly entertaining, deeply right. funny. but I just thought, like, okay, so this dude is a dude who, like, collects, like, millions on interest on the backs of, like, a poor woman who's just trying to, like, build a business for her family. But then he turns around and he's so tender just because he knows that it's his biological grandchild. Like, nah, you know. Mm. And similarly, like, we go from the father being like, I hated you because you were like me, to suddenly being like a tame good dad. I don't know.
Mm.
That just, those two did not work for me. So there were other people I disliked. I mean, let's be real. We were meant to dislike almost everybody in this show, right? But I think for me in particular, like the trajectory that those two men got, y'all, like the men just needed to have it worse. All the men in this story needed to have it worse. And like, were the women the real evil ones? Yes. But I just, it didn't satisfy me.
Mm-hmm. For me, it was actually Jungwook, the brother, because by the end, I'm like, you had no purpose. You had no reason to be the way you were. You could have actually chosen healing for yourself and stop faking a twisted ankle for 20-something years. Like, what? Yeah, so to me, I was just like, yeah, you're the worst character. Ooh, now that I'm thinking about it, the ex-boyfriend, though. First half,
I was
like
gonna
that
say the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's my character. Because it's just like, again, I'm kind of in the same boat as Nat. I wish he was more evil. I wish all the male characters were more evil, because then it would further justify their actions. Because, mm-hmm. like, in hindsight, like, what actually, in terms of what Nat said, like, what evil thing did her father, her biological father, actually do, other than the fact that, like, he kind of just basically ignored her and ignored how his wife treated her? Like,
right. Which, and that's being complicit to abuse is bad, but that's it.
But, like, that's really it. Like, why, if you were going to go that route, why not make him part of the abuse?
Right.
Instead of just ignoring it in his house? Like, and maybe they did that because they wanted to give him this ending of being a good dad and whatever, but it just didn't make it believable, you know?
Yeah, I feel like they wanted to give Jamie the possibility of romance, and they wanted to give...
absolutely.
I mean, they clearly didn't get it together, right? But like that scene where we're supposed to be like, oh, what's going to happen? You know? And then I feel like they also wanted to give the energy of like, Iju will have a happy family with parents who love her. And it's like, but she didn't actually need both of her parents to end up that way. So that was...
Well, and then the other thing is like, if they were meant to do that storyline and give her the two happy parents at the end, what was the whole point of Sung-hoon's character's family literally adopting her and
right.
like that's becoming this family? And
right.
being the family she never had. Like,
right.
if we were going to believe that, which we did, I fully loved that part of this drama where
yeah.
they
yeah.
were, when she didn't have anybody, his family and himself supported her and supported what she wanted and had her back. I wish they had made her family, especially the men, more evil, because that would have been even more satisfying than it was.
That's such an excellent point. Like, I wish that the ending had really hit hard on the idea of Iju and Jamie being enfolded into Sodaeguk's family, and like seeing that, you know, combination of biological and found family as mm-hmm. like the reward for those, for that group of people,
mm-hmm.
Was not really the note they hit. But, you know, back to your point, Caitlin, of like, you know, XBF can go. I think the thing that bothered me about him all along is that he kept doing these things that were, I don't want to say normalized, but like he wasn't being framed as evil, but the things he was doing were a huge problem.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like if they were going to give him that space, like you said, it should have been like hardcore, like he's a bad guy, but framing it like it's not normal that you are repeatedly sneaking into a gated community you don't live in, standing behind columns to watch women, sneaking into your boss's house. Like, none of that stuff is okay. None of that is normal. And at no point is there any real energy towards him of like, dude, what the heck is wrong with you? Right? So I didn't like that. Everything could have been times 1,000 in the energy and I would have loved it. But I think in particular, he was the one character where like nobody really acted like he was doing anything wrong other than lying about liking Yeju. And I find that kind of thing more insidious because that's the stuff that happens in everyday life, right? In everyday life, you don't actually have a brother pushing someone off a yacht, right? What you have is men sneaking around feeling entitled to women's attention in different ways and being places where they shouldn't, crossing boundaries when they shouldn't, and nobody calls them on it, right? So I think that just bothered me as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned the family briefly, and it tickled my fancy that they were so about protecting Yeju, but they never really actually did anything. They would just sit around and say, oh my God, I can't believe they did that to you. And oh my God, how evil they are. But they never, like the actual footwork, they never did anything. It was just Yeju and Dogok and the secretary.
But here's my question. What should they have done? What do you think they should have done? Because other than that, like,
putting pressure,
mom to mom face off.
That's true. Like,
and then not letting the bank acquisition go through. I can't off the top of my head think of other places where there was an obvious opportunity for them
getting the DNA test for the baby, which sort of was a, you're never going to join this family.
Okay. I guess they were also very...
treating them too, like when they were in the same room. Yeah, what you were saying, like when they were having that talk with after the whole article thing came out, and the mother and Yura had to like sit across the table.
Yeah,
and they did like the whole crying fest or whatever.
Yeah,
like that's true. We had scenes of like that, but I mean, I do
and the
agree.
Sister
Carol, like,
stepped
the,
up.
Yeah, the sister in the shopping
situation. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I just feel like Yeju was too often on her own doing something. And I'm kind of like, sis, your life is constantly under threat.
Yeah.
Why are you out and about by yourself? I don't understand it.
It made sense. And we even talked about this last time. It made sense in the first half that she didn't know yet how to rely on Dogok.
Yeah.
But by the second half, it's like, girl.
Especially when you're crying so much. You're not
oh my gosh. Yes.
You're not a F around and find out. You're
at this point.
Oh my God, I can't believe you did that to me. I'm gonna cry. And then I'll tell Dogok.
It's a totally different interpretation of her character. And I, like I said, genuinely enjoyed this story. Absolutely would rewatch it. And also prefer the version of Yeju in the webtoon. And like, if you guys ever have free time and read it, I would really love to hear your thoughts in comparison, because I really, really think, like, take the webtoon, hand it to some Thai actors, and it would be a banger. Or Turkish. Like,
Turkish, yeah. I'm sure we'll get a remake for sure, because this thing
It was popular.
Yeah, we'll have it for sure. All right. Who was your favorite character since we've done worst? Who was your favorite?
I liked Sung-hoon's character because he was the greenest flag of all green flags all the time. And it was just really refreshing because basically the only thing he did wrong is not tell her about the thing on his wrist.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't get that normally in K-dramas, especially as tropey as this one.
Yeah.
You do not get that. So I just was so surprised on how much of a green flag he was the entire time. And like, they didn't flip something on his head.
He was wonderful.
He was.
You said, his only flaw were that unnecessary lie and his terrible styling. I don't understand why he was in such ridiculously baggy clothes the whole time. It was not flattering.
True, no. True.
Yeah.
No. I think that was budget.
But it's also, budget, but also it's the trend right now.
Oh, yeah.
It is the trend right now.
But it doesn't work for his body type.
I didn't say it worked for his body type, but it is the trend.
Okay, so we are in agreement. I would say other than Dogook, my second favorite character is probably his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that I can articulate all the reasons, but
yeah.
I think she just comes across quite realistically.
Yeah.
In terms of her fears, her concerns, her what she's trying to do in terms of how she shows up for her biological children versus her stepchild and all of that. I just, I liked the range of her personality that showed, you know, she wasn't one tone either. To a point you made earlier, Caitlin, we see her growth as a character, but it's not like she had far to go. It's not like she was a terrible person and suddenly became wonderful, but we see this like very realistic emergence of her caring and nurturing feelings, you know, towards a new person as those circumstances and their relationship develop.
I loved her character too. I think she stood on business all the time, and she didn't hesitate to sort of, I don't want to say put someone in their place, but stand up to someone. The conversation with Iju's stepmom in her house, I loved that face off so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, no, this girl is part of my family now, and this is how we're gonna do things, whether you like it or not. And yeah, I thought she was the coolest mom ever.
Yeah, especially when she was like, oh, you misunderstood. I meant your little daughter has to go. She is not allowed.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Yura. So is Yura the daughter of the convict who came out?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting the way they chose to play it out. But that moment where he was like, hey, you even look like me. I was like, oh, yeah. Actually, that was one thing I was going to say. I feel like the casting was really well done in that sense of like, for all the people who were, you know, supposed to be birth secrets or whatever, ultimately, I do think that they cast people who had sufficient enough like similarities in either their facial features or their expressions or the way they would look at each other when they made eye contact, that it really did make those people seem like they were related.
That's true. I think we're at the end. How would you rate this drama? Caitlin, I already know yours. But do tell the listeners.
I gave this a 9 out of 10. Again, I absolutely love this drama. It's probably a highlight of 2023 for me. The only reason why it's not a 10 out of 10 is as I did have some qualms with the writing at the very end in like 15 and 16. But overall, I loved it. It was a great wild ride.
Same. 9 out of 10. Like for me, in my notes, like episode 10 is when I literally wrote this is when the real revenge drama energy is kicking in. I would have loved to have it sooner, but I guess that's what makes this Mokjon light really good gateway, you know. And like, I wanted more of the tea slaps. I wanted more of those like shocking moments. I wanted more of that. And so if there had been more extremes and more evil, this would have been a 10 out of 10 for me. Mm. But it was really good.
Mm-hmm. I would, I think I'd give it like a, I'd give it an 8. Let's say an 8. I loved the first half, and the second half just didn't hit for me the way I wanted it to, but I enjoyed it. It was good. So an 8. That's really high for the drama.
An 8 is still very high.
It is high. It's high.
You know, and I think I don't even know what category of expectations I would say I had for this, because I genuinely cannot remember the last revenge drama I watched that I enjoyed. Like, I'm still scarred over Eve. So, you know, so I think, you know, in comparison to other revenge dramas of the past few years, the ones that I have personally watched, right, because I don't watch a lot of them, I think that helped give it such a high rating for me. But I really, really agree with you, Carol, that, like, I think my absolute love of the first half is what carried me through the second half. And, you know, I feel like, I don't know that I would recommend this story to just anyone to watch, you know, so it's not a 9 out of 10, like, tugged at my heartstrings, I'll be thinking about this for the rest of my life kind of 9 out of 10, but it's like a, this was fun, you know, it was solidly fun. I enjoyed myself. This was not stressful. Certainly in the beginning, I was absolutely counting the days till the next episode. But frankly, that gets old. So I'm glad I didn't feel that way the whole 6 weeks.
You know what's a good, I just had a light bulb moment. What's a good revenge drama? Temptation of an Angel and Temptation of a Woman. Both are really, I feel like Temptation of an Angel. Oh, 21 episodes. You can do that. That drama, I remember when I was watching it live, it has Bae Soo-bin in it. And should I give spoilers? No. Well, he has the scene where he comes back to us. That's all I'll say. So he also has a comeback, but it's not with a time loop or anything. It's more with surgery. Let me tell you.
Is it even possible to watch that?
I ate that up.
That's what I'm looking. I'm looking to make sure on Viki if it's there or not.
No, it's. It doesn't look like it is. It says it's on SBS World, which might be YouTube only.
That might be YouTube.
Yeah. I'll try it.
You have to try it. That's the level of revenge that I'm just like, woo!
I think the other one she mentioned, though, is on Viki. Temptation of a Woman, right?
Let me see.
Okay.
It's under a different name, though. Or Temptation of a Wife. Is that what you were talking
about?
Yeah,
maybe. Let me see. Hers was really good. Yeah. Yep.
This is the... It's under... It's the long... It's like 130 episode.
That's the long one. But it's fantastic.
I'm gonna put that on plan to watch. I'm watching that one.
I don't have the stamina for that anytime soon. But Temptation of an Angel is on YouTube with English subs. So.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna definitely put that on my list too.
Oh, there was a scene where he wears the silver suit and he walks up a couple of stairs, and I'm just like, Jesus, take the wheel. This is cinema. This is cinema. It was fantastic. I can't wait till you watch it.
That's amazing.
I actually was expecting something because I hadn't looked at the writer, but because Sung-hoon was in it, is I was expecting the level of Mokjon that came with Love, Marriage, and Divorce.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and it wasn't that level of Mokjon. And also, I didn't watch season 2 or 3 of that because I was so mad at season 1 ending. But anyway, so like, it didn't reach that level of Mahjong, which is why this entire time I'm like, I wish it had reached that level. But I still thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's a great revenge drama, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's a great gateway for people too.
Exactly. So. Yes.
Not too much for new folks to enjoy, and I think it did bring a lot of new folks into the genre.
Oh yeah.
So I'm excited for that. Yeah, it's been wonderful chatting with you. Now, Caitlin, what do you have going on, and where can listeners get in touch?
Don't have much going on, which is nice. Gonna slow roll my way through the end of the year in terms of K-drama world, but you can find me on Instagram at K-drama bingo and basically across all the things. But Instagram is where I am most active. So join me over there for some Fan Fridays, Wednesday watch lists, and tropes on Tuesdays.
I mean, socially, I have a lot going on, even though I don't want to have a lot going on. Drama-wise, we're getting there. We're getting more stuff on my watch list. But yeah, you can find me at No Sleep, the number 4 dramas on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, as well as my blog. I try to post as frequently as possible, like 2 to 3 times a week, if I'm not by my computer and able to type over the weekend. So yeah.
Thank you. And if you have stayed with us till the end, please let us know what you thought of this drama and this episode. You can find me on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. The last thing I'll say is y'all better start A Journey to Love. Because
wait, can't we just wait till it's done?
It's 40 episodes. And as of today, the 7th of December, there are 20 episodes out, so we're halfway there.
I can't lie to you. I have no time for 40 episodes in the next 3.
Now listen.
But hey, wouldn't you rather that I start 2024 on that beautiful note?
I was about to say, can I wait till January and then
Okay.
I'm not going to wait too long, but let me at least start the year with something juicy, something that I know I'll love.
That's fair. I know you'll love A Journey to Love. And if you are watching, you're listening to us and you're watching that show, please DM me because I need to talk about it. I already have Liliana from Tea and Soju coming on the podcast to discuss it. I'm excited to have her on. Please look forward to one more episode, which will be my wrap-up episode for the year, talking about all the dramas. What was a hit and what was a dud? And that is it from me. I'm Carol, and see you on the internet somewhere. Bye.